The Medicare annual election period deadline is coming soon. I'm Meredith Vieira, here with examples of people who found the key to the right coverage at myhealthpolicy.com. Meet Larry. He likes doing things online.
I took my time and found the best Medicare Advantage plan for me at myhealthpolicy.com.
Next is Mary. When she wanted answers, she picked up the phone.
I wanted a local perspective on plans, so I called myhealthpolicy.com.
And finally, Michael.
I prefer face-to-face, so I chose myhealthpolicy.com and enrolled on the spot.
Go to myhealthpolicy.com to learn about top-rated Medicare Advantage plans in your area, including $0 premium plans, or call 1-800-GO-START. That's 1-800-GO-START, myhealthpolicy.com. Meredith Vieira is a paid endorser. KF Agency operates myhealthpolicy.com, not connected with or endorsed by the U.S. government or the federal Medicare program. A licensed insurance agent may call.
When you're a pro, your reputation is built and proven over time. That's why the Home Depot carries Loctite PL Premium Max Construction Adhesive, the strongest on the market. It stays 100% solid after curing. It won't develop air pockets. And like your reputation, it holds up over time. Right now, get 12 or more for the bulk price of only $8.53 each. Loctite PL Premium Max at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Minimum purchase required, U.S. only.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Weekly Extra podcast. It's been a long time, Blake. It's been a long time.
I wish you guys could see how Will just started this podcast. He's holding a stack of poker chips and almost dropped them right as he hit the record button. He tried to save it. And I guess the poker chips didn't fall, but Will, the first 3 seconds of this podcast, Will was rattled. Not quite as rattled as he was
last
on
night?
The timeline last night.
Man.
Or a little bit this morning before your bubble tea.
Yeah, that bubble tea. Shout out to Quality on Queen Street, Queen and Spadina. I've never seen more than one other customer in there, which is always a concern.
Is it Alex?
It wasn't Alex. All right, there are more Asian people than Alex. No,
just
no,
you guys really are the only people I know drink bubble tea.
Yeah. All right. No, I'm kidding. We're going to have to restart the podcast already.
By the way, who's hosting this? Because usually I host the extra, but I think you're hosting this one, right?
Is that the case?
Yeah, I don't know.
We can just trade off.
Yeah,
Blake,
it doesn't really matter.
It's just so good to have you in my house again.
Yeah, where are the cats at?
We locked them out. We don't want them to like meow for food and shit. Plus, we know you're a dog guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm fine with cats, whatever.
Okay. Cats are great.
I'm fairly allergic. So,
yo, there's cat hair all over this house.
Oh, that's fine. But like my family has cats. So like that's why I don't really... You know, if I'm there a long time.
Wait, so you're allergic when your family has cats?
Yeah. Like when I go home and visit, there's cats and stuff. And like a bunch of my friends have cats. I just prefer dogs.
Okay, that's fair. We're here to talk about the Wizards series.
Yeah. It's going to be a series.
We only get together for the important moments now.
Yeah. All-star snubs.
Yeah.
That was last time I was here. It was some all-star podcast, I think. Maybe it was a preseason pod.
I don't know. I think it was the preseason.
Yeah.
But as soon as we mentioned that we're going to do this podcast together, our mentions were flooded with, finally. So,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. I only dropped one other podcast today, and you only dropped one. What? You only dropped one late last night, so.
That is true. Yeah,
it's been a long time. You and Ross, don't tell us we need to get a podcast just for your commute.
What's that?
It was just the name of a person who was like, oh, I need that for my community.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the other Ross, and I was like, oh, that's relevant to another thing.
No. No.
No. Listen to Pound the Rock. Anyway.
Oh, God. Wow. We're 3 minutes in, and you're plugging other stuff.
We haven't even talked anything on this podcast yet.
Are you all right?
I
want to ask, because you were pretty shook last night.
Let me try to put that into context, right? It was sort of like, going into the night, I had a couple of things I wanted to see happen. I mean, the last night of the regular season was phenomenal, right? But there's a couple games that I want to look at. The Raptors game, obviously, has some implications. The Wizards Magic game had some implications. The Celtics, the Sixers Bucks game had implications. And also the Cavs Knicks game had implications.
Not to mention Minnesota Denver.
Yeah, also that was just really fun. Yeah. I don't understand why you would drop a play to give Nikola Jokic a turnaround jump shot with a guy when he's clearly tired. But regardless, I mean, you know, that's other teams. We don't have to concern ourselves with non-playoff teams.
Ooh.
Shouts
to Jamal Murray, though.
Shouts to Jamal Murray. He should have gotten that shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Will Barton, actually. Will Barton killed it.
Will Barton about to get paid?
Is he? Yeah, that's true, actually.
I think he can opt out of the third year of his deal. I think he's...
What do you think? Third? Sixth man? Will Barton?
Yeah, I think he'll probably bump Fred. I didn't think he would, but... Between Lou Will, Eric Gordon, Will Barton, and Luke Mbamute,
yeah,
like Van Vliet, and then you also have to factor in that Van Vliet might get some of his votes cannibalized by other Raptors bench players.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's why you got to vote the whole bench mob as six men.
So you got to write five names, or the Raptors Twitter account is putting out seven. They're including Norm and Bebe. You put seven names in the one slot.
You're not putting Lorenzo's head in there? Yeah. Lorenzo's head?
Man.
When they went with, Norm's hops, I mean, yikes.
Yeah. Playoff active Lorenzo Brown, though.
That's right. That's correct. Congratulations, Lorenzo Brown, for a great season in the G League and also earning that contract.
Yeah. He got the MVP honors, and yeah, it's only an extra, like, I think over what he would have made if he was just, like, regular called up on a two-way. It's, like, an extra $4,000 for the 177th day of the season. But now you're going to get that playoff share.
Yeah, exactly.
And if the Raptors go deep, that's yeah. Like there's I think it was reported the playoff bonus pool for players this year is $20 million. Mm-hmm. So split that by 16 teams, escalating in money as you advance further.
That's not bad.
Yeah, that's a fair amount of money.
And everyone gets the same amount, right?
I think there's some team discussion.
Oh, okay.
I would assume most teams just split it evenly. Like you could do it based on salary, but it would be like a pretty lame move for DeMar to be like, hey, I take up 30% of the salary cap, I should get 30% of the playoff bonus, yeah, too. Right.
Fred VanVleet's getting $10.
Fred VanVleet getting that Dante Jones money.
Oh my god. he just goes back to his hotel room, he finds a bag, a brown paper bag with $3 $5 bills in it.
Fred VanVleet, by the way, news on the pod. I just came from practice.
Yeah.
Fred VanVleet, x-rays were negative on his bruised right shoulder. He's considered day-to-day. Dwayne Casey very much made it sound like Fred VanVleet will be available on Saturday. He said, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't. It's just soreness. So
right.
The Wave God.
The Wave God. He's going to be ready. He's fine. He's tough as nails.
Be fine. As long as that shoulder's okay to carry the bag this summer, he's going to be just fine.
He's getting that bag.
Yeah.
He's getting that Norm bag. just going back to last night. Like, basically, there were four games of interest. And all four games, as I watched it happen, one by one, they fell against the Raptors. To start, the Sixers completely washed the Bucks. All right, the Bucks are just—they were fully healthy. They got washed. It was 70-29 at one point. I turned that game off. Then I put on the Wizards game. I'm like, all right, look, the Wizards—they're playing the Magic. The Magic have like tanking. Like they really need to lose that game. They really had to lose that game, and somehow they managed to win that game because the, you know, Magic are trash.
No John Wall, no Otto Porter.
Yeah, but still, the Wizards, like, just, come on, just take care of business. Like, the other team is actively
trying to... Thomas Sadoransky would be the best player on the Magic.
Yeah, I mean, he basically is Evan Fournier, so...
he's Cheick Dele.
Oh, my God. Cheick Dele. Don't even mention Dele.
Look, they're not entirely similar players, but I was watching the games back, the Raptors-Wizards games today, and I'm like, man, the Raptors fans are going to hate this guy by the end of the series, because he's, like, he's very good and all that. We should wait and get into this later, but...
And then the Raptors game, that sucked. It wasn't like about the game itself. It was so intense.
Was so stupid.
Yeah.
And I don't mean really stupid as in that like anyone was stupid, because Casey and Spoelstra did the same thing. It was just like weird stuff just kept happening, and no reason for anyone to be out there.
Wayne Ellington snapped.
Yeah.
For no good reason.
Wayne Ellington.
Yeah. And then of course LeBron basically only showed up, but only half showed up, because he just wanted to have his 82 game story written, basically, and like,
and his 10 point game streak.
Oh, and his 10 point
game streak. And he got just enough rebounds that he locked in a career high rebound average.
Yeah, wow. So he pulled in a really shitty Westbrook shift, basically.
Yeah.
Whereas Westbrook actually had to go get, like, 100 rebounds. LeBron's just like, I'm going to get 10 points.
Westbrook had to box. Rebounds. Westbrook had to box out Carmelo Anthony all night.
Yo. Oh, man. He hates Melo now.
I know people feel a certain way about the triple-double chasing.
It's just funny.
It was... It's great. It's, like, when Kyle Lowry's hunted his triple-doubles in the past, where, like, yeah. Raptors are up 25 and he plays the first 90 seconds of the fourth quarter just to try to grab a rebound.
Yep.
Yeah, whatever, man. Whatever makes your star players happy.
That is true. That is true. Although, if you devote the whole project to... Anyway.
Yes.
We don't talk about Westbrook. But anyway, so yeah, no, so Raptors landed with the Wizards and they got the Cavaliers in the second round. It's not great. Obviously, it's a tough schedule. It's not the easiest path for sure. Good thing... We can start here that this will be the first time the Raptors enter the playoffs pretty much fully healthy. I mean,
yeah, other than Van Vliet's shoulder being banged up.
Which, like, you know.
Yeah.
How banged up is it? Do you have any inside intel?
No, honestly, okay. Look, I'm not a doctor and I only watch through the TV screen like everyone else, and Van Vliet wasn't available at practice today.
Okay.
But I was not concerned about his shoulder when that play went down. I was much more concerned about some other potential injury that they won't use the word of, because once you use the word of, you have to enter the protocol. I have no idea. Maybe he was fine. Maybe he just looked a little loopy or whatever. But the shoulder, I can't imagine. Like, there's no dislocation. There's no separation.
Yeah.
There's no strain or sprain, whatever one it is for a shoulder. Like, he's fine structurally.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're not mentioning that other thing, so...
Right. And look, there's... I mean... If it's that other thing, obviously you want to take your time. But realistically, there's only one game between now and Tuesday.
Yeah.
So, worst case scenario, even if, like, Van Vliet is not, you know, like, completely 100%, you still have a lot of off days in between. But, I mean, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan are fully healthy, especially Kyle. Kyle looked great in that Heat game. Like, what's, I don't know, what's your level of confidence with those two?
Maybe right now? Lowry looked a little too great. I don't... Again, this goes back to, you know, whether the guys should have been out there in the last couple of minutes anyway. Mm-hmm. Didn't love seeing full Kalo in a completely meaningless game. The dude's out there locking up his league lead and charges drawn, running into baseline cameramen.
Yep.
Anyway, Lowry looked great. I am not concerned about Kyle Lowry entering the playoffs. I know he was in a little bit of a shooting dip there, but the playmaking was still there. He had shown these flashes of little Kalo quarters. Yeah. I think he's in a good spot. DeMar DeRozan's shooting... You know, over the last seven games, his field goal percentage is where it's been all year. The true shooting is down a little. His true shooting started the year much improved, and it's slowly come back down to his kind of the level he's established the last 3 years.
Yeah, he started missing threes again.
Yeah, and the last maybe month of the season, he's not getting the free throw line as much. And someone asked me on Twitter today, am I concerned with DeRozan's shooting over the last little bit? And I looked, the last seven games, he's basically at his exact field goal percentage, high 20s, three-point shooting, and he just hasn't taken a lot of free throws. And I think part of that is probably part of the conservation strategy. Like, he's talked a lot about being able to turn it on when he needs to. Look, it would take a lot for me to get to a point where I thought, you know, where I was even worried about DeMar DeRozan getting his shots off.
Yeah.
It's more encouraging to me is that he's consistently been that playmaker. And I know it's tailed off a little bit of fourth quarters, but it hasn't really tailed off all season, the assists. So
For sure. I think the approach is going to be good because going over some of the film today, it was very evident that the Wizards basically went to the same old playbook they went to in 2015 when, you know, they sent a lot of high ball pressure at DeMar. And if it wasn't, like, necessarily the on-ball pressure, they would try to trap and contain and hold them towards the sidelines, and, you know,
the sideline is big. Washington is they have so much length; they're really good at directing you where they want you to go,
right?
And which is fine because they don't have a lot of rim protection. So if they do funnel you into a big, you're fine,
right?
But yeah, you put some great clips up on Twitter where, you know, Jonas has to make those plays, or Serge has to be there for the pick and pop,
or even guy like CJ or Kyle Lowry.
But yeah, some of those counters they ran for CJ off the ball as the DeMar JV action is going on the other side of the floor. They'll put those wrinkles in. And yeah, DeMar, I mean, he played pretty well against Washington this season anyway. I know Otto Porter is generally a good defender for him. But DeRozan, he had 19 assists over those four games, so kind of right where you want him to be.
Yeah.
And then he put up 23-plus in every one of them and only shot poorly in one, really. So
yeah,
you know, obviously that's a concern. But in terms of how he's entering the entering the postseason, I think he's in a good spot. I think they've done well to maintain the workload and everything. And yeah, those guys are fine. And no one else is hurt. And like, yeah, the extra rest early in the series helps the Wizards as John Wall gets back to 100% and Mike Scott is in the concussion protocol.
Right.
But like, it's not the worst thing for Lowry and DeRozan as they ramp back up toward 40 minutes. And for a guy like Serge Ibaka, who... is much better when he's not in a back-to-back situation. And even like a guy like CJ Miles or even some of the young guys who have never played anywhere close to this many minutes before.
Especially Poeltl.
Yeah, I mean, he's looked a little gasped.
It's a very big difference when Poeltl like completely turns it on and some nights where he's like trying to turn it on but he's tired.
Also, maybe don't play him 19 minutes straight in the second half.
That was weird. I really thought JV would come in at some point.
But, I don't know. Okay. There was a so JV left early in the third and then came back. And I swear I rewound it because no one else saw it too. He was like definitely something was up with his elbow.
So but then he kind of just like there was no timeout or anything. And he kind of just like
played. So I don't know if it was a funny bone or what, but he came out after and then he came right back in. And then he didn't come in down the stretch. And
okay,
I don't know. There was nothing nothing about it. They didn't say anything about it. Serge is fine too, by the way, after taking that elbow to the chops.
No, he's still just as handsome. He's fine.
Yeah,
he's fine. He's going to Rosan right now. Oh, man. What a discovery. Thank you to the Raptors for putting that out there. We'll be eating there every day of this week.
Sure.
Yeah.
By the way, my favorite running thing right now is that the Raptors' official accounts will use the term Mafuzi. And, like, we all know what that means by this point.
Yeah, hey. As long as not everyone knows what it means, you know?
Yeah.
You know? But it's good marketing for Serge, it really is.
It's a terrific marketing. If I had that kind of reputation and that was getting posted on my social accounts.
I have access to RR. I could tweet something out. You just got a brand.
It just wouldn't it wouldn't be as accurate as Mafuzi.
All right.
Yeah. Look, I'm talking to the certified banger over here. So
Wow. That may or may not be my internet password, but you guys don't know where I live. It's cool. So you're not worried about DeMar.
I'm not worried about DeMar.
I think DeMar is gonna be
fine. I'm not worried about them in terms of like how they've played this season or down the stretch or their health. Obviously, there are some general matchup concerns, but I'm not entering this any more concerned than I would be, if they were facing anyone really. Like,
okay,
they're playing well and they're healthy.
Yeah. Okay. Then what matchups do concern you?
This is the thing is that the
Raptors. It's like a SpongeBob meme, man.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
It's a tough series to break down like that because the Raptors are better than the Wizards.
Yes.
And that is demonstrable on a number of fronts. Uh-huh. But, like, you go down position by position and, like, they're all close.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Serge Ibaka and Markieff Morris are definitely going to kill each other by the end of the series.
Oh, yeah. They're fighting by game three.
Yeah, I said they'd both get tossed out of game two when I was talking with someone about it earlier. 22 combined technicals this year, those two.
Yeah, no, those two are definitely going to fight each other.
They're a walking double tech.
It's a 1,000% scenario. And if that's the case, Serge, don't fight, please. Yeah. We need you more than they need Markieff.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's not one any individual matchup. Like, obviously, there are these little wrinkles of... Mm-hmm. Who guards Bradley Beal? And we're going to get into all this stuff. Who guards Bradley Beal? Or what do they do? What do you do if John Wall gets hit on OG Anunoby and just gets to play free safety, trying to steal, poke drives away and stuff like that? If you're talking about one matchup that I'm most curious about, and I'm sure you have a take on this, I still can't really wrap my head around why Jonas Valanciunas can't play well against Marcin Gortat. And this goes back to like the 4-game playoff series. 3 years ago. Yeah. Obviously, Valanciunas and Gortat were completely different players. But Gortat has aged. Valanciunas has rounded into kind of the early part of his peak on the big man aging curve.
Mm-hmm.
But the matchup has never really swung any differently than that. Maybe not that extreme. But three of the 4 games this year, I thought Gortat outplayed Valanciunas. Uh-huh. And it doesn't make a ton of sense because Valanciunas is better.
Yep. Yeah, he's definitely better. Okay, look. I think we should make it clear that like Gortat himself actually hasn't necessarily gone off. Right? Gortat has had like between like 9 and 12 points in the 4 games this season.
Based on the NBA.com's matchup data, which you have to take with a lot of grains of salt,
right.
He shoots about 20% more when he's on the floor opposite Valanciunas.
Right.
And the Wizards' offense is better for it. But it's not like he's dropping 20 pieces.
Exactly.
He's just, they actually let him touch the ball once in a while.
Oh my God.
Marching Gortat gets used normally. Like, Raptors fans think Jonas Valanciunas gets used.
I was just going to say that. There needs to be, yo, Samosas, please go stand for Marching Gortat, man. Because Marching Gortat really is being persecuted the way JV is not. But, I mean,
Yeah, Washington is 22nd in the league in volume of using their pick and roll dive man and bottom five in post ups. And they don't. Gortat can't get none.
But here's the thing, what Gortat is very effective at is setting these massive ball screens that are sometimes illegal.
I was going to say, so first media availability of the playoffs, and Dwayne Casey makes sure to mention Gortat's illegal screens. He's like, oh yeah, he's clutching and grabbing. He's very good at those, grabbing a guy on a screen. And said it in a very... It was very diplomatic. Yeah, he's not going to get in trouble for it.
Dwayne's but he was really good at that.
He was very clear at just being like... Mm. Yo, we know, and we probably sent the league some tape about these Gortat screens.
I mean, go look, listen. And in the fourth quarter, especially in the last 6 minutes, Marching Gortat is a phenomenal screener.
Yeah. And look, glass houses a little bit here because Serge Ibaka is also one of the clutchiest screeners in the league.
Hey.
You just don't notice because he's slipping the screen almost all the time. He
slips and pushes. Yeah. It's a very smooth move. It really is.
Serge is not the cleanest player, and I love how often he gets away with it, but there's a reason that everyone wants to fight Serge all the time.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's a skill. I remember I had a conversation with Casey.
Okay.
It is. I do think it's a skill to be able to, take those little edges.
Okay.
It's something... I was talking with someone with the Raptors earlier in the year, and we were talking about Dario Saric, and that came up, and he's like... He plays like an old vet already with how much garbage he gets away with. For a guy... Ibaka maybe is going to need that more as he rounds into his late 20s and early 30s because... Yeah. You need those little edges, and you need those little edges in a playoff series. And Gortat and Ibaka trying to out dirty screen each other is going to be an interesting subplot.
Serge, just don't, whatever you do, don't get yourself ejected from the series. We really, really need your defense.
Yes.
And
the 3-point shooting, man. Washington's going to let you shoot.
And the 3-point shooting, that's true. I mean, if they're going to trap DeMar and stuff, Serge has got to be there and he's got to make shots.
You said there was one clip that you posted of DeMar was going left and he got trapped sideline and he threw the behind the back to JV.
Yeah.
That's there for Serge, too. Serge Ibaka is a good enough 3-point shooter to help. He's not a good enough 3-point shooter that teams are going to shift their defensive strategy to.
Right.
He finished the year shooting 36%, which is a good number for a power forward.
A lot of them are open, too.
Yeah. And most of them are above the break, which, probably doesn't help his percentages.
No, it's not.
But, those are going to be there.
Yeah, so. And even on games where the three-point shot is not necessarily there, he can roll to the mid-range area. It's a very comfortable shot for him.
Yeah. Those little short rolls to the elbow?
Yeah, I mean, this was in John Schumann's statistical...
Schumann stat!
...preview. But apparently, Serge Ibaka was... the most accurate mid-range shooter in the NBA this season with at least 200 mid-range attempts.
I like that cutoff point because Gorgui Dieng was definitely number one if you if you lower that.
I mean, even later in the piece, he mentions how Mike Scott was a better mid-range. He shot 56%. Serge was 49.
Yeah.
But that was only 100 mid-range shots. But I mean, basically the Gortat thing is, Gortat is really good at opening up room for his guards, and then at that point it's a tough thing for JB to guard because he has a really hard time positioning himself, and it's just sort of been a traditional thing. It just hasn't fully gotten to the point where it's no longer an issue. JB just really has a difficult time picking his feet, figuring out the right angles, making a read, sort of picking up yo, is this guy going to shoot? Is he trying to pick up the dribble and pass? He doesn't really guard pick and roll well. And I think that's ultimately the real issue. I mean, with a guy like Wall, he's so explosive that, JV likes to give space, which is fine-ish. But that's so long as John Wall is not able to accelerate using that space and get past him, which has happened in the past. Not this season because John Wall hasn't played the Raptors this season. And then with a guy like Bradley Beal, he's so good of a mid-range shooter, especially off the bounce. I mean, not in the fourth quarter, because we'll talk about it. They're the least clutch team possible.
They're the Raptors.
They're the Raptors. This is going to be
Previous year's Raptors, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I do want to say something. I don't want to get into a JV argument, because you've had enough of those on Twitter. But I get what you're saying, and absolutely, schematically, how many... Dwayne Casey refers to them as negative steps. JV takes where you back off a step where maybe you don't need to. You can play that a little straighter, a little higher. One, you don't want him hedging out too high because then the foot speed backwards becomes an issue. Duck Shoe, Gavin McPherson, I thought posted some good clips today of other examples from the Raptors-Wizards games where Valanciunas did come up a little higher and took that space away. But to the more general point about Valanciunas not being good guarding pick and roll, Raptors top 7 in the league in guarding pick and roll ball handler and roll man.
Right.
So the scheme, you know, I don't know how much necessarily it's any more an issue with Valanciunas' defensive ability. Obviously, that dictates the scheme to some degree.
Yeah, yeah.
But the scheme has been very successful. It just so happens that the Wizards, with John Wall and Bradley Beal, and, you know, Otto Porter, Kelly Oubre are good cutters and good at coming off of screens as well.
Those guys get secondary buckets.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the primary action.
My point is more going to be that you can't send a third man at the pick and roll.
Right.
And, you know, Gortat, you don't really need to tag that much anyway. He'll finish around the rim, but they never pass to him.
Yeah.
But, like, you don't want to send a third guy because those guys are really good at sneaking in the baseline, and the Raptors aren't very good at recovering back if they do send a third man.
Yeah.
So you do kind of have to guard the pick and roll with two guys, and Wall and Beal are a pretty unique backcourt combination to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I mean, look at Beal's numbers. Like, we can't necessarily refer to anything with John Wall because John Wall hasn't played against this year's Raptors.
I will say, this is not related to the Raptors specifically. I was shocked when I dug into John Wall's shooting splits for the last couple of years at just how bad a mid-range shooter he is.
He is terrible. He shot 28% this season.
Yeah, I knew that this... Obviously, you go under on John Wall because he can get such a head of steam. But I thought I just kind of figured with the uptick in his three-point shooting...
Yeah.
He shot like 37% on threes this year or something like that. That the mid-range shooting would have come along as well. But
he shoots those DeLon threes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the defense is going to sag off you and you're just like, all right, whatever.
He did shoot a lot of them this year, though.
He did. But, I mean, he also had the knee injury for a while, so that he wasn't able to drive as effectively. I think that was the major issue with John Wall this year, was that he even earlier in the season, before he had his knee surgery, he was suffering from, like, a knee thing. Yeah. And so, like, it really did affect him in terms of his driving kicks. It just, you know, his assists were down because of it.
He wasn't finishing in that floater range at all.
Yeah.
And this is something Eric Kreen and I talked about a little bit on our podcast on Thursday. The Raptors invite, the defensive strategy is designed in part to invite a ton of those like 3 to 10 foot floater range shots, trusting that, you know, anything closer to the rim, the bigs got because they've dropped back, and anything further out in the like 8 to 12 foot range, you know, Lowry, Van Vliet, Wright, to Norm to some degree, they're all very good at those rear view contests where you trail over a screen and then still contest from behind or catch up to contest.
It just rushed the shot a little bit.
Yeah, and the Raptors did defend those shots really well. They had one of the lowest opponent field goal percentages at the rim and in those floater ranges this year.
Right.
But Wall has been terrible at those for 2 years in a row, which, like,
I mean,
maybe I just had too much respect for John Wall, or like,
he's good though. That's
I really like John Wall. I was surprised at the degree to which anything not at the rim or behind the 3-point line was a wasteland for Wall for 2 years in a row.
He's Dennis Schroeder with gang signs. I mean, this is a known fact. I mean, shout out to Harsh for that one, but it's known. But I mean, also, like, the bigger issue to me is that, like, the Bradley Beal comes off a screen pin where down, Gortat is really high up. Either it's a pin down or it's a dribble handoff or something like that. Or maybe he's dribbling, but he gets to pull up at that 3-point arc. And that's where it's really dangerous, right? Mm-hmm. It's one thing to, like, invite the mid-range shots. It's one thing to invite floaters or whatever, because you'll live with those for the most part. Man, Bradley Beal's a really good jump shooter. He's a really, really good jump shooter. And, you know, he's liable to get hot. We've seen that happen against the Raptors. He kind of torched the Raptors every single time they played this season. And, you know, it's just a tough matchup when you have... he's a star player, so he forces you to play differently. And, you know, the Raptors are generally comfortable with JV dropping back. And honestly, the Raptors this season have been very successful with JV dropping back, regardless of the opponent. But in a specific playoff matchup like this, I don't want to see Bradley Beal come off and have room to take 2 or 3 looks at a catch, like an open pull-up three, when JV's really all the way back in the paint, because at that point, you know, he catches his rhythm, then he gets really aggressive, then he starts moving off the ball, the Raptors off the ball, I feel like, have some trouble. I mean, maybe that's just from watching the Wayne Ellington game yesterday, but...
Yeah. I mean, they have individual defenders who don't do well off the ball, right? Like, that's DeRozan, if a guy is right in front of him, can defend. It's the back cuts. And then OG Anunoby is much better on the ball than off. Norm and DeLon are really... I guess Fred a little bit, too. Some of the guys can guard off the ball. Yeah. Team-wide, their defensive numbers on, like, cuts and off of screens aren't that... Like, they're pretty average, so...
Yeah.
But yeah, Bradley Beal... Only shooting 30% on pull-up threes this year, but he'll take them, and that's...
If he was really good against the Raptors, this is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like,
it's crazy. But, and also, you know, he shoots over 45% on pull-up twos. So even if you're not talking about those threes, even if those come at the high elbows, Beal's a really good mid-range shooter. And obviously, strategy-wise, the Raptors would still rather the Wizards take those mid-range shots.
Yeah.
Like, that's what the system is designed around. But Beal shoots 46% from 10 to 16 feet and 41% from 16 feet to the three-point line. So, you know, that's a good player. And if he, like you said, if he gets in a rhythm and he's getting the space over those Gortat screens and on those handoffs to pull up, and they run some... It's pretty simple stuff, but they just like they run him off Gortat in ways similar to how the Raptors run Lowry when he's off the ball. Now that JV's such a more dynamic passer and a dribble handoff threat, that like Lowry gets us like 1-3 a game, just like coming off JV at a weird angle, and maybe they fake the dribble handoff on one side and it goes like JV finds him on the other.
Yeah,
they'll do a lot of that for Beal with Gortat. Now I don't know how much of that they're gonna do with John Wall back.
Right,
and this is kind of what's. This is what kind of underlied a lot of my prep was that, you know, there's all this data, but it's really like two half seasons.
Yeah.
And we have no tape on Wall with the Wizards against the Raptors with this new defensive scheme.
I mean, I think, look, with I'm ultimately more concerned about Beal than I am about Wall, even though I think Wall's a better player. Wall defensively scares me because of how much he can physically... get into a guy like Lowry and really, really make life difficult. I think it's gonna be a lot. It's gonna be very hard for Lowry to get like buckets against Wall. Usually, I think it's gonna have to happen a lot off Wall, and you know, Lowry has moved a ton off Wall this year, so that's good. But
well, let me ask you this: if you're Washington, say, you know, we don't know how healthy John Wall is. We don't know if he's only been back for four games. He sat second night of a back to back.
Well, we know that he already ruined the team chemistry again, so that's good.
Do you consider putting Wall on Anunoby and having Beal guard Lowry? And because Wall is pretty good in that free safety role where you can just poke balls free and cheat for steals. Obviously, you don't want to task any high usage guard like Beal or Wall with a tough defensive assignment.
Right,
same thing the Raptors are going to try to avoid at the other end.
Mm-hmm.
So you think it's going to be Wall guarding Lowry for the most part?
I think so. I mean, I just think. Washington will look at that as an opportunity where they can put an all-defense guard or an all-defense caliber guard, on Lowry. Like, Lowry's very important. I think John Wall, like, with his size and his athleticism, and honestly, like, he's just a pretty good defender overall. Like, there's nothing else really to say about it, but...
When engaged.
But he's engaged a lot. Like, he really... Yeah. And it's going to be in the playoffs, I think.
Yeah, he'll be engaged now.
Yeah, it's this... I'm just saying, he's not like a Westbrook scenario.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's actually what people think Westbrook is on defense. which is scary to me. But if we're talking about matchups, right? Like, I think the Raptors aren't going to change the starting lineup. Realistically. Not in game one.
I don't think they need to against Washington.
You don't think they need to? See, this is where you and I differ a little bit. Because what I would think with Washington is... They play a little bit smaller than, you know, they come across.
Yeah.
Like, Markieff is, you know, a small forward size. Porter is a small forward size. Beal and Wall are, like, normal sizes for their positions. So it's really just Gortat. And Gortat is not, like, physically imposing in the way, like, Steven
Nor
Adams
do they is. Rebound super well when he's on the floor.
Yeah, and he's not even... He can't even play extended minutes, really. Like, it's not... Anyway, so the Wizards are a little bit small. So what I would like for the Raptors to do is... Try as much as possible. Maybe they don't have to do it in the starting lineup, but especially the way they close, and this is the way the Raptors have closed games this season, is they put Serge at 5, or they put Jakob Poeltl at 5, a more mobile option. You take away a bit of the scoring, you take away a little bit of the defensive rebounding, but you put those guys at the 5, and someone like, you know, Siakam. Siakam was great in this season series against the Wizards that the Raptors split 2-2, making a lot of hustle plays, you know, we know what Siakam does. Just fantastic defensively. Yeah. And so
in a pinch, you could put him on Wall or Beal probably too. He does have that kind of quick twitch. I know he's better suited for, you know, true wings than guards at this point.
But I mean, like, the only thing that, you know, someone like Siakam really does give up on those switches is like a pull-up shot. And if John Wall pulls up, that's a win for you.
Yeah.
Every single time. So
also, by the way, Pascal Siakam stopping James Johnson on the final possession of regulation last night. Yeah, kiss your fingers, but like that game didn't need to go to overtime. Just let James Johnson get the score.
I mean,
let him get the bucket.
Siakam probably didn't even need to put that put back in.
Yeah. That was a nice play.
That was a nice play.
I dug throwing it deep into the backcourt for DeRozan and then having CJ Miles set like kind of the half court like pseudo screen because then if Miles' man comes off of him to slow DeMar down, Miles is going to have a free look at the top of the three-point arc.
I like that.
And that was a good pass to DeLon.
And they usually run that for Lowry.
Yeah. Like Lowry in the corner or Lowry backing up in the backcourt?
Lowry in the backcourt.
Yeah. And usually it would be Fred in the corner, not DeLon. But Fred obviously was...
it's okay.
Had that person. Anyway, we don't need to talk about that Heat game. Sorry.
Okay, so but I think that's ultimately what the Raptors are trying to play. Like, you know, like, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Yamahimni killed the Raptors on the offensive glass. And he comes off the bench. And JV is our best defensive rebounder. And he's best suited.
You need to bump the brakes here, though. Because if you want to make the case about the starters and the way the Raptors are going to be at their best closing, that's fine. Don't make your case to me that JV needs to come off the bench and neutralize Yan Mahimi.
I'm just saying it because it's similar to the Bucks series last year when Greg Monroe was causing the Raptors troubles. And you flip it around. It's not necessarily about JV.
It's similar, except Yan Mahimi is...
Yan Mahimi?
Yeah.
You're talking about a $17 million a year center.
Look, man, that year in the playoffs that he started passing out of those 4-on-3 things against the Raptors when he was a Pacer, that Yan Mahimi was scary. He has, like, Biombo hands, though.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is, there's definitely a place in this series for them to go small for minutes. I would not be surprised at all if they close small. And when I say small, I don't want four out around Ibaka. I don't really think that's tenable unless Ananobi's having a really good series.
Would Siakam with Ibaka be four out? Or
is no. Three out? Three out. I mean, I kind of draw the line between Ananobi and Siakam.
Yeah, 3.22, which is 3.4%.
Like, basically, if everyone on the floor is playing up a position, that's probably... not, I don't know. I think there's a place for it in the series. I definitely don't think you need to consider changing the starting lineup. The Raptors starters have been so good all year. Nothing, you know, one of the biggest weaknesses of Washington's starting lineup is their defensive rebounding, which is somewhere that JV can make a difference. And then, honestly, I think if Jonas Valanciunas played like the current version of Jonas Valanciunas in those games against Washington, you know, this would look, the lineup data from those matchups, which is mostly garbage because nobody played in any of those games anyway. I think it would look more favorably. And I think, you know, I think the starters have done well enough as a group and Valanciunas has improved enough that, you know, I don't, unless they're just getting killed early in the series, like, I don't know, man, Marcin Gortat and
Mahimi. I'm not doing Casey. I have a very quick, you know, trigger finger with JV's minutes. Look, if I see JV drop on pick and rolls and Bradley Beal hits 2 threes, I don't know if I play him the rest of the game. Like, it's that serious for me.
But if you're Dwayne Casey in this situation, and if Jonas Valanciunas has dropped on those pick and rolls, it's likely because you told him that was the scheme.
No, man. So I refuse to believe that Dwayne Casey is telling JV, dude, drop on this one when Bradley Beal's pulling up for three.
Right.
That doesn't make sense to me.
I'm sure there are examples where Valanciunas has made a mistake, and I'm sure there are examples where he's done done what the scheme called for, and it hasn't paid off. I get it. I get that, you know, Washington doesn't use Gortat in a way offensively where JV's defensive strengths are really all that valuable. And, you know, but at the same time, Gortat also can't really exploit some of JV's weaknesses. Like, Gortat can't shoot. Gortat can't put the ball on the floor, really. Yeah,
Gortat can shoot when JV is wide open. Yeah. He hits that mid-range jumper.
And look, there was a time
which is fine. I don't care if he takes a mid-range jumper.
There was a time where Gortat averaged a couple assists. But just, I don't know, man. I think Valanciunas has turned in a good enough season that you got to have faith in him. And you've got to have faith in this enormous sample of the starting lineup being a successful fivesome. And
well, I mean, I think also that what you're mentioning earlier, like, is very true. Like, the Raptors benefit a lot from what JV brings to them on offense.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't mean post-ups. He just hasn't historically been able to post up
Gortat
a lot, but...
But look, he's a great screen setter.
He's
an elite offensive rebounder.
Yep.
The post-ups he has gotten this year, they've come a lot more improvised. Mm-hmm. The Raptors are the number two team in the NBA in post-up scoring per possession. They don't go there very often, but when they do, they've been pretty effective. Yep. And those small improvements in his passing make those a little more tenable. You run a split cut over top of that, or a cutter comes through the lane, he can now find those guys. He found Lowry in the Miami game with a great pass. I think he was at the elbow. Yeah. And found Lowry cutting.
No, that's been the big improvement for JB this season. Yeah. He can face up a little bit in the elbow.
Yeah, and I think, one, you want to reward him for that. I think, two, you're the better team in this series, and if you want to dictate terms with your highly successful large sample starting lineup, you should do that.
But this is a problem. Nobody... The Raptors have not historically been able to dictate terms with JB. Right? Now, how often have they tried to do it? That's another thing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I just think that, like... in closing scenarios, unless you really need the offense or the rebounding, I would rather prefer them to close with like Serge and Siakam, or like Pascal.
Closing scenarios,
that's all I'm really saying.
And the Siakam and Ibaka
get really bad to like actually bench him.
Yeah, the Siakam Ibaka front court. If you're closing and you've got a 4 or 5 point lead, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially Washington hasn't done this a lot because I don't think it's a good idea against most teams. They might try Markieff Morris at the five a little bit. They've done it with Mike Scott at the five, and like, in those cases, maybe the center hits threes, but like JV get every offensive rebound.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, we don't need to spend the whole time talking about JV. Obviously, you want to feel the game flow, mm-hmm. and you want to see how the series is going when you're determining your closing lineups. I really don't see a scenario in this series where JV is a big enough problem that they need to change the starting lineup for that purpose. I got asked today by someone whether I think they would change it if OG is getting killed by Beal. I don't think that's going to happen. OG's been so nice the last 2 or 3 weeks.
He has been, quietly.
I'm optimistic about his ability in that series. But I think even that that's more likely to be an issue than, the Wizards are hitting too many mid-range shots because JV's back a step.
Yeah. I think the OG thing is going to be tough because he's going to be asked to guard Bradley Beal. And Bradley Beal's a bit quicker than him. And he can shoot.
And Beal's good, man. That's an all-star.
Yeah, he's an all-star, right? And so...
Look, and I know he brought the clamps out against Oladipo, though. And Harden.
He did.
Harden, playing around with that new NBA matchup data.
Yeah.
And, like, Ananobi's impact on Harden was one of the biggest single, like, individual impacts on a player in a matchup all season long.
It's going to be good for the finals.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The consolation finals.
Anyway, I feel like we've talked about JV too much in...
Yeah, we have. Okay.
Anyway.
Do you want to talk about the OG thing, or do you just want to say that, like, Norm... It's nice that Norm guarded Beal well. It's a nice backup option.
But I mean, you watched the film today, so I would like... Yeah. I'm curious on your take as to what Norm did well to limit Beal, because sometimes the issue, I love this matchup data, and I think it's going to be very helpful to guide what we're are we looking at when we watch a game back. So much that goes into that is just going to be like into the results is like, oh, maybe Beal missed some shots,
right?
Beal made some against OG. So I'm curious you saw, in the type of looks Beal was getting against those two defenders. I really only care about those two guys. Like Lowry, Van Vliet, and Wright are going to see time on them because
it's
the Raptors
nice to have nice defensive guards. It really is.
The Raptors are going to play two point guards a lot, and the weirdly, this is a weird thing to say because the Raptors would be undersized against the Wizards at the guard spots. But like, neither John Wall or Bradley Beal. First of all, they're the same size, so if you cross match your guards, it's not the end of the world. You can switch if they run some 1-2 stuff.
Right.
But also, like, if one of those guys takes you into the post, fine.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's exactly. Like, this isn't DeMar DeRozan getting switched onto Terry Rozier.
Oh man, come on. We're past those dark ages, Blake. We've since...
Never too late to throw Celtics slander out there.
We've since... Yeah. Man.
The Celtics are going to mess around make the Eastern Conference Finals.
I hate that so much. I hate how much things have worked out for the Celtics. But they'll complain about it still. Okay. The Norm thing is very similar to when Paul George was torching the Raptors in 2016. Norm is like... He's very quick. And he's like... pretty tenacious, and he's like willing to go into a physical battle. He has the same look on his face, so it doesn't look like he's going that intense, but like he's very quick and he's very good at trailing just one guy. If you just tell Norm trail this one guy, generally speaking, he's done a good job of it. And if you keep it really simple for him in terms of that assignment, just chase Beal. If you're gonna go over the top and like take away that three, he's done a really good job of taking away the pull-up three off the high screen. He hasn't been screened as hard as OG has by those core top moving screens, which is big. That's the step one. You want to take him off that three-point line. Norm has done a good job of doing that against Beal. But also just like Norm has, you know, he's a little bit closer to Beal's size, right? So he can match him. He's a little bit quicker than OG is in terms of just like lateral quickness and stuff. And also he's longer than Beal, so he's able to contest. I don't think necessarily that Norm is like is just so good that we need to like switch up the whole rotation to have Norm instead of OG in that spot. I just think that like if it's a time where OG is really going like getting cooked or whatever, like you have Norm there as a security blanket, and I think that's pretty much the game plan going in.
Do you think DeLong gets the second crack at him though? Because you're not going to want to run 11 deep.
Yeah.
So in those transitional lineups, or I think you'll probably see if Scott Brooks is smart, he's going to shelf his 10th man. Whether that's Ramon Sessions, Tim Frazier, Ty Lawson, Jody Meeks. Like, he's kind of rotated those guys in and out of the 10th man spot. If I was him, I'd axe that. I'd stagger Wall and Beal. Yeah. Use Satoransky as your third guard, and that's it for the guard rotation. Yeah. So you're going to see some Beal and bench units, probably. Would DeLon be the guy from the bench unit you're giving the crack of Beal to?
Yeah, I mean,
because I think he can better replicate what you were just describing Norm doing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean... Yeah, but I mean, also, like, Norm's really physical, and I think the Wizards do have an advantage in that, like...
What are you saying really about physical. Our sweet slender boy?
DeLon, look, listen, DeLon, he's very physical, he's very effective being physical, if he could take that to you, but really, he's really just good at playing in gaps, whereas Norm is very good at playing on the person.
Also, DeLon, this is unrelated to this matchup, because I don't know when it would come up unless they ran three-point guards and he was stuck on Porter, but, like... DeLon's post-entry denial for a guy who's not big or physical is really good. And long arms helps, obviously.
He's good in space. And he's so quick.
Yeah.
The Raptors... I could even see Fred taking some Beal minutes, too. Because Fred's really good at just avoiding screens. And that's half the battle.
Also, I feel like part of why Fred's good at defending guys is that he annoys them.
Yeah, probably. You're like, bro, stop. You are so small.
Yeah.
You have.
This is a Friday night in March. We're on a 17-game winning streak. Yeah. You're picking me up full court.
Yeah. Look at Chris Paul. He bothered Chris Paul. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Chris Paul is as sure-handed of a point guard as it gets.
Yeah.
And he
Although, also, him. Everything bothers Chris Paul. Just like true. In the general that sense. That's
true. Yeah. Chris Paul is literally full of hate. It's That's why it's so funny to see him fail.
Okay. At this rate, we're definitely not going to get a chance to get the questions. So.
Well, yeah, that's true.
We should go over some of this stuff. Do you want to talk at all about the residual anxiety from the sweep? Obviously, Alex Wong had that great piece in the New Yorker. Yeah. Alex Wong in the New Yorker. What a time.
I mean, I'm proud of him. It's not the first time, though. Yeah.
It's not the first time. But Alex,
he wrote about Jeremy Lin's dad, which is wild to me.
Alex is great, man. He's turned in a hell of a season.
Alex, people have to stop sleeping on Alex. I don't really know. Here's the thing about Alex, right? He doesn't really broadcast himself in the way that's like a lot of writers do. And like... You know, you kind of have to be thirsty publicly if you're a writer, right? To sell yourself a little bit.
I feel like he does some stuff. Like he posts his stories on IG and he self-retweets,
he self-retweets, which is, that's the thing. But like, you're also wild humble, too.
I have a one-tweet policy for articles.
That's because you have 16 articles a day.
Yeah.
You're going to flood everyone's timelines. But I mean, like, with Alex, like, he's just very, he's very humble about it. But I mean, like, seriously, just look back on, like, the stuff that he's done. Like, he had a podcast. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people know, but Alex had a podcast. He had guys like Deezus on there. He had, like, Zach Lowe on there.
Blake Murphy.
Blake Murphy was on there. I was not on there because I was not a thing at that point yet. So, like, you know,
just. Now, I sent you the pic today, though, of what the podcast is going to look like when me, you, and Alex are at the NBA Finals. Alex and I also were like Eastern Conference Finals Game 5. We did a late night podcast in Cleveland, and it was a bad podcast.
Oh yeah, I remember that. That was like 3 a.m.
It was bad.
Weren't you guys driving?
No.
Was that before the drive or after?
No, we greyhounded.
Oh my god.
This was after the game, which was like one of the biggest blowouts in the history of conference finals.
Yep.
And then after like work was done, and then after going out until the bar closed with a couple other writers. So,
well,
not Toronto writers.
Not Toronto writers.
So with those clowns.
Enough of those.
Yeah.
What else did you want to talk about? I mean, like the
residual anxiety. Do you have any of that? Like, are you sweating game one? Are you sweating the sweep?
No, I don't think the Wizards are that important anymore. I just think it's a generalized thing. It's not even about the Wizards. Yes. The Wizards sweeping the Raptors in 2015 was, like, obviously terrible. But, like, I don't know. I've kind of moved on from that and just towards general Raptors anxiety. Because there's other things that I've like brought up. I don't know. There's just other things that have crept the confidence beyond the 2015. Because that was so bad, you can take it as an aberration.
Do you see the quote I tweeted from DeMar about the home court advantage, like going into game one?
He's like, yeah, I don't think about it until you guys mention it.
Yeah, swag is at an all-time high.
That too. That too. I love when DeMar gives those quotes instead of, I have $100 for anyone that will clap LeBron. Dante Jones, where you at? Yeah. I'll give you 100. I'll compete you.
Okay, I'm going down our checklist here of things we had to talk about.
Oh, shit, we had a checklist.
Yeah, so the one thing is, it's not Raptors anxiety related necessarily, but in general, do you feel like this series has a big psychological swing factor coming out of game one? Because the Wizards locker room does feel kind of tenuous. The Raptors, you know, not all of these pieces have been through the playoff struggles, but there might be some fear set in if they come out and put up like 75 points in game one. I feel like it's a bigger deal to Washington because their locker room is terrible.
Yo, their locker room is so bad.
And they added Ty Lawson to fix it.
Bro, oh my God.
They added Ty Lawson, by the way, I think past the deadline to add guys.
I mean,
tomorrow is the day that playoff rosters have to be set, but I thought you had to be signed by the 177th day of the season to be playoff eligible.
We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. But also, I'm actually kind of hoping Ty Lawson plays, because the last time the Raptors saw Ty Lawson in the playoffs, that was easy money. Corey Joseph would put up 2 points for every 0 points that Ty Lawson scored. Yeah. It was
Ty Lawson went full Reynolds in that Indiana series. Yeah. Okay, so the
Ty Lawson got a way bigger beer gut than Reynolds.
That's true. Dan keeps it tight.
Dan does keep it tight. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not an insult.
So, do you think? What do you think about all this stuff that's been out there about the Wizards room? Do you think it has a factor here?
I think if they win, they'll be fine. That's it.
With the 16 locker rooms in the playoffs right now. If they win, they'll be fine.
No, but I mean, I just mean like even cohesive locker rooms, right? One thing is when you're down 2-1, maybe you have a heated film session with Damari Carroll telling the media that you had a heated film session. Thanks for doing that, Damari. No one needed you to do that. but I mean, like, you know, even the Raptors are a very cohesive team. But like, you know, when things go tough, that's just how it goes. Whereas like these games are very emotional, right?
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, if things work out, then people just kind of tend to fall in line. That's why, like, I don't know, Washington have historically had these issues in their locker room, but it doesn't really affect them in the playoffs. And in fact, they come across as a very cohesive team in the playoffs, just like, you know, Cleveland. They basically do a really shitty Cleveland impersonation.
Okay, let's quickly go down checklist here.
Yeah.
I just want your rapid fire thoughts on who's going to win each matchup.
Yeah.
Point guard, Lowry versus Wall.
Even.
Shooting guard, Bradley Beal, DeMar DeRozan. Even though they're not guarding each other, the impact that they'll have on the games.
Even.
All right. Otto Porter and OG Anunoby.
Porter.
Markieff Morris and Serge Ibaka.
Serge.
You got to swing that one. So this is why, you know, I know people probably thought it was weird that you were hyping Ibaka's importance in this series, but yeah. Like, all the positions Ibaka's are pretty huge. Even. Yeah. And yeah. Ibaka's better than Markieff Morris. Yeah. I know some people won't agree with that, but whatever. Valanciunas Quartet.
That's a weird one, but I think overall Raptors centers will play much better than the Wizards centers.
Okay, wow,
that's not by committee. But look, I think in terms of Gortat versus JV, even
I think Valanciunas is going to win that battle. I was with you on the rest of it.
Okay,
I know, and this has been like a season long thing that no one. I don't think anyone could accuse me of being JV hive or whatever.
No, you have.
But I do feel like I've been relatively more optimistic about JV's play this year than even like it's the one point of. The one point Eric Kareen and I consistently disagree on is JV's place.
Yeah.
He's been good, man. And I think
he has been good.
I think he's gonna be up for this.
It's like the Raptors in the playoffs, man. You just have to show it to me before I really, really believe. That's all.
Okay. The bench in general, and I think this is where the biggest swing factor is.
It's not even close. Regardless of whether Washington cuts their bench to 3 guys, 4 guys, 2 guys.
I don't know, man. You're telling the Raptors to change your starting lineup for Jan Mahimi. So.
Bro, Jan Mahimi is going to be a massive factor. Off the bench.
If Jan Mahimi doesn't get run off the floor.
I mean, the Raptors bench is not even close.
Yeah.
The Wizards bench is awful. Like, awful.
Yeah, look, Mike Scott's had a really nice season, and I really like Thomas Satoransky.
Those are the only 2 guys that are good.
Kelly Oubre does some nice things and dresses super well.
I mean, Kelly Oubre is a good player overall. He's a nice defender, but like he's inconsistent offensively. Yeah. He doesn't really go hard to the basket. Can't really dribble. He's not a really guy who sets people up. I mean, like, what is he really doing?
And he's not, like, like, he guard, yeah, he's not Porter is a big thing.
Yeah, Porter's great. Porter shoots, like, Porter's a 44% three-point shooter. Porter's
awesome, man.
Porter's really good, but everyone hates him on that team for no reason.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite players, like, favorite role players in the league.
Okay. He looks like Bidoof, the Pokemon.
I don't know what that is.
It's like a beaver. Yeah. I'll show you.
Okay. And then, you know, this will be a divisive question. Dwayne Casey against Scott Brooks. You have to like this for the Raptors, right?
Dwayne Casey, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Even if it's not in game. And this is another thing is, like, even if those were even or you didn't have faith in Casey, the Raptors.
Okay. Just imagine this thing wearing, like, safety goggles. Yeah. That's basically all the Porter.
Anyway, yeah, even if you didn't have faith in Casey's ability to in-game adjust, which, you know, you...
I mean, that's a bit overblown. It really is.
It is. And the fact that he can't adjust between games is such an old... Like, that expired years ago.
Yeah, of course. He's great at that. Yeah. He's
great. But I still get it in my mentions sometimes. Anyway, even if that wasn't the case, the Raptors have so many more adjustments available to them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if you're Washington and things aren't working in the second unit, we just said their options are Jody Meeks, Ramon Sessions, Ty Lawson, and I love Tim Frazier, but if Tim Frazier's playing this series, things have gone bad for Washington. In the front court, it's even worse. Yeah. Like, Jason Smith is their fifth big.
Jason Smith was talking shit already.
Jason Smith will hit exactly 45% of his 16 to 18 foot jump shots when he's in the series.
That's it.
So the Raptors just, I mean, this is a big part of the depth, and I've been asked a ton, you know, will the Raptors use 10 guys? Will they use 11 guys? Even if they don't, a huge part of this depth is, you know, all your guys a lot better now. Lowry and DeRozan are coming in healthier and in better shape, and you can play so many different ways. You can play two-point guards. You can play an extra wing. You can play Ibaka at the five with Siakam at the four. Like, you've gotten to look at all these things because you've gone 10 and 11 deep. Mm-hmm. You know, like, the average team only has 9 guys hit the 1,000-minute mark, and the Raptors had 11.
Yeah.
And then Bebe's there.
Bebe's healthy, right?
Yeah. Okay. He was available the other night.
Okay. All right, cool.
Okay, so we only have a couple things left that we have to hit, and I have to get out of here. So the Wizards are not... We talked about Morris and Ibaka potentially fighting.
Yeah.
The Wizards are not a very likable team.
Of course not.
Yeah, this is like just... I just felt like we need to make that
point. Oh, no. They're one of the most downright detestable teams in the league. And I mean, Paul Pierce came to that franchise, like, infected them with Paul Pierce-itis, and then dipped.
Yeah.
And it's still there.
Yeah, that's a big... It's a big swing factor for Washington Series 2 is not having Paul Pierce. Or Drew Gooden.
Oh, my God. I had forgotten about Drew Gooden.
Pick a Gerald Henderson Award candidate for the series. Who's getting the most Gerald Henderson Awards?
Okay, Otto Porter is too good.
Yeah.
For it.
Otto Porter is, I feel like, where the line is.
Yeah.
I mean, the man makes way too much money to get the Gerald Henderson Award.
Yeah. This is why they hate Otto Porter, right? Because they spent all that time dreaming on KD, and KD didn't come, and they had to give the bag to Otto Porter, who's great, but, like, it's Otto Porter, and you expected KD. Yeah,
it's like giving the bag to DeMar Carroll.
Oh, seriously. Like, yo, the rap, like, oh, my God. I mean, John Wall looks at Otto Porter every single time, and I'm sure before he makes that cross-court pass, which is going to lead to a good three, he always thinks that could have been KD.
Yeah.
Every single, that's why they hate
KD
him.
KD wouldn't hit those at 44%, though.
No. KD would do some pull-up stuff and then tweet about it. But, I mean, Mike Scott?
Okay. Yeah. Hopefully he's healthy.
Yeah,
in the concussion protocol right now. So
hopefully.
I'm going to go with Satoransky.
Okay. You really like Satoransky.
I think he's really good.
He's all right.
I don't know, man. I think he's...
Kyle Lowry clocked him.
Well, yeah. Kyle Lowry is a four-time All-Star.
Okay, no, but I'm saying, like, Kyle Lowry this season hasn't really, like, cooked someone before.
Yeah.
He cooked him. Like, also, one-on-one dribbling,
also,
going past
him.
That's cooking.
Can we just also put in context that we're talking about who's going to be the best bad player to have impact in this series?
That is,
like,
true. That is true.
Like,
true. But I'm just saying, Mike Scott, you know...
They also have no players.
They have...
Yeah, like, I'm not giving Gortat the nod when he's going to play 20 minutes and probably... Him and Scott Brooks are going to leak stuff to the media about John Wall. I'm going to be responsible for some of that, by the way. I'm going to tell the Wizards wild shit.
Please do. Blake, honestly, we need you. We need you to step up there.
Do we have anything else? Oh, are you surprised that the Raptors are such an enormous Vegas favorite? They're the second biggest favorite of any favorite in the first round after Houston. Bigger favorite than Golden State. Bigger favorite than Cleveland. against Indiana?
Yeah, dude, come on. How many times have we had to see LeBron beat Indiana before? We're just like, but like, that's a sweep.
Yeah.
That's a sweep. That one's a sweep. I think part of it is that Vegas likes to set lines to entice betting. Of course, they don't want to do that at the expense of losing a lot of money. But, you know, it's an exciting bet. I'm sure people are thinking about the Raptors and thinking about how much this team, quote-unquote, chokes and stuff, and they probably want to, you know, entice that. So, but beyond that, I don't really know how lines are set, really, so I don't want to speculate beyond that. But I think the Raptors win. I think if you want to talk about, like, a playoff prediction or whatever, which I think people are looking for,
yeah.
I think the Raptors win the series. It's, like, I think the most likely scenario is six games. Second most likely is five. Third most likely is seven. And then maybe after that, the Wizards win in seven. So that's my top four. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm pretty close to you with that. Running the numbers and looking... If I didn't have the weight of the last couple of Raptors playoff runs on me, hey. I think I'd pick Raptors in five. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Raptors in six. I think... I haven't looked yet at what the different models spit out as the likelihood. I actually think Raptors in five is probably going to be the most likely because those models tend to not account for things like John Wall only playing 41 games... the Raptors, like, statistically, it would be almost unprecedented for a team this good to get bounced in the first round not be named the Clippers.
Well, it's a good thing I didn't nickname them Clippers East last year.
Yeah. Okay, we can rapid fire a couple of these questions before I gotta go.
Okay.
Do you think Fred and Kyle will still be closing games together in the playoffs? I think, you know, we talked about this with the size similarity with Beal and Wall and how they can both maybe guard each of those guys.
I also think that, like, last season, Otto Porter, when the Celtics played the Wizards in a seven-game series, the Celtics hid Isaiah Thomas on Otto Porter, and Otto Porter can do shit.
Yeah.
So if you need to hide Fred, I mean, realistically,
I do think Otto Porter is better than that. But if Fred's out there, though, you because if
he's on Otto, like the post Isaiah thing, which like, Otto Porter has no post game.
Yeah. I don't necessarily agree with that, but it's a developing post game. I'll use a Zach. Okay. You gotta do the Zach Lowe and very diplomatically.
Oh,
say something. It's a developing post, emerging.
Yeah, it's okay. All right. Damn, this is like.
Anyway,
it's
I don't
like a
think
liberal studies class.
Yeah, the issue with hiding Fred on hiding quote unquote Fred is that he's out there mostly for his defense.
Yeah,
He's out there obviously for his shooting and to let Lowry play off the ball and stuff too. But
right. You
know, if you are trying to hide Fred and then that means DeMar DeRozan has to guard someone who can actually create their own shot, you know, that's, it doesn't make sense to have Fred VanVleet out there in that situation. So, but yeah, I think they could close together.
I think so.
Henderson. Oh, I guess we touched on both of this. Who is Gerald Henderson on the Wizards and why is it Jason Smith?
Oh God, it's not Jason Smith, guys. Come on.
Mike Lozon wants to know about the lack of respect that the Raptors are getting in this series. Honestly, that's, you know, part of that is why are Raptors fans still listening to what Paul Pearson, Stephen A. Smith, and Skip Bayless have to say. But I think the Vegas line speaks volumes, man. Vegas isn't going to try to prove some point about the Raptors or entice betting and eat a huge loss on
this. Exactly.
They're not going to let the Wizards go off at plus 500.
Look, the Raptors are good. I just think once a narrative comes out about a team, that's all people get stuck on. Until you change that narrative, that's your narrative. That's it. And so that's why people default to that. Like, it's crazy how much hate you see. Like let's say the NBA... Twitter page tweets out, happy 32nd birthday, Kyle Lowry. This is when's his birthday? January or something?
Yeah, it's March. Or late March.
Late March, okay, so whatever. So they tweeted out, right? So it's not even the playoffs or whatever. All the comments will say things like fraud, playoff choker, whatever. And it's for no reason, but that's all it is. It's just, there's only one public story on them yet. And so until they change that, that's all it is. But don't read too much into it. I mean,
Raptors,
he got outscored by Matthew Dellavedova, but that's not going to happen again. There's no Matthew Dellavedova.
And honestly, the Raptors, they work better when they're in that situation media-wise anyways. They don't do well as favorites. Did we experiment enough in the regular season with lineups with Ibaka at the five and one of Siakam OG at the power forward spot? Probably not with Ananobi. I think there's enough of a Siakam Ibaka sample to comfortably roll that out. Do we need more Tyler Hansbrough? Sorry, man. The 905 got eliminated from the playoffs already.
Bro, who was cutting this Tyler Hansbrough gif?
Because it stops short of the rim, too.
Yeah, like, where is this from?
I don't know. It's from the Nets series.
Oh, God.
But it's from DeMarvelous.
Is that Andre Blatch?
I think that's Andre Blatch, yeah.
Wow.
Andre Blatch is getting outrun on the floor by Tyler Hansbrough. This is amazing. I don't have an answer for your question, but this is actually, the more I watch it, this is the best GIF.
Yeah,
wow. Andre Blatch trying desperately to catch up to Tyler Hansbrough as someone on the Nets bench dives out of the way of the floor. Someone toweling the floor.
No, that's Brandon, actually.
Yeah. No, it's in Brooklyn.
It's still Brandon.
Yeah. All right. New Yorker Famous asks us, we know that Beal and Wall can do, how does he say his name, Shanks online?
Shanx.
Shanx.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think.
That's why I didn't want to say it at first.
Okay.
But Shanks.
Shankar, what up?
No, Shanks works too. That sounds like he's just a terrible golfer. Shout out to Kyle Lowry.
Oh, wow.
I have no idea if Lowry's a good golfer or not.
Seems pretty good, man.
I mean, he does like the golf. Plus, you get all that power through the backside.
I was going to say, you must have a crazy swing.
Okay, so Shanks asks, we know what Beal and Wall can do and hope Kyle and DeMar can neutralize them. Who are you most afraid of otherwise? So I guess this is an interesting question we didn't really touch on. We mostly focused on the defensive side of the matchups of the other positions. But is there a third Wizard scoring threat that you worry about?
I mean, it feels blasphemous to say no, but no, not really. Not like, okay, look, there's a difference between, like, a guy can go off for 20 points, but, like, you're not necessarily worried about him. Like CJ Miles, right?
Right.
CJ Miles is a guy that can go off for 20 points.
You just live with it.
Worried about
it. You gotta live with
it. Just live with it. Same thing with JV and whatever. And so, like, I don't know. Not really. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, basically, there's not one guy. It's if the Wizards hit their threes, and the Wizards are a very good 3-point shooting team, but they don't shoot a ton of them.
Yeah.
So if you,
that's because they never pass.
Yeah. If you weirdly though, they're third in the league in assist percentage, but I feel like they're dead. They must be dead last with John Wall.
Yeah, John Wall turning into prime, like, bad Russell Westbrook this season was very fun to watch.
Yeah. And yeah, John Wall still terrifies me though. As Wrong. Much as we could poke fun at the change in style, but yeah, the Wizards also, when I was doing the data, that have some oddities in their profile like that, where, like, they're just like, they don't drive very much, but they're very good at creating points out of the drives, and it doesn't look like they pass a lot, and they don't shoot a lot of threes, but somehow all these buckets get assisted.
Yep.
I don't know, like,
whatever, they play a high pick and roll, they drive and kick, they do occasional post up with their forwards, they don't really want to do that. That's their whole offense.
It's pretty simple, really.
It's a Scott Brooks offense, which is all due respect to Scott Brooks, but, you know, we know what to expect, so. At least there won't be any surprises. We'll say that much, right?
No, there won't be. There really won't be. I mean, every Wizard is pretty much a known commodity at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the Raptors could surprise in a negative way, because, like, none of the young guys have really done this in the playoffs. Like, almost none of these guys were in the playoff rotation last year.
Who's going to be shook?
I don't think Van Vliet or Siakam have that in them.
No. And Poeltl is very steady-headed. He's kind of like a little bit too cognizant to be shook of something.
Yeah.
She's just rationally thinking his way through it.
Yeah.
And then DeLon, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. DeLon's
going to play a lot better at home.
Yeah. And the one thing is, like, they're going to leave him very open on those threes. And he has shown at times when the three ball hasn't been dropping, he'll get a little hesitant on those and kind of give guys recovering time to close out on him because he hesitates.
Mm-hmm.
That's maybe one thing. But that's a really small thing. That's not like a shook thing. It's a my jumper hasn't been going in thing.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to be seeing a lot of that from John Wall as well.
OG does not strike me as a guy who would care a particular amount about the bright lights.
No.
Really, it's really just our stars that could get shook, you know? It's Kyle Lowry, really.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Kyle's done a lot better this season. Give us a chance.
Kyle's second half since January came, Kyle was like a top 10, if not top 10, top 15 player, like, analytically from January onward.
Yep.
Which is right where he was the last couple of years. So, I don't know. Maybe that doesn't give you a ton of faith, but he has definitely played his best basketball in the back half of the season, which is super encouraging.
It's good. DeMar carried them in the first half. Kyle carried them in the second half.
And it's almost, I almost like when that happens, because for years they've talked about how they do that like a quarter at a time.
Yeah.
And now they just do it for like a half season at a time.
It's cute, man. It's cute. Yeah. Basically, as soon as Kyle Lowry was like a question for the All-Star game, he became an All-Star and stayed that way. So.
Yeah. All right, man. Wait, I gotta get going. I gotta go hoop. Yeah, thanks, man. Just throw this podcast out now.
All right,
terrible.
That's it.
Yeah.
Everyone on Twitter, please tell Blake to go sleep. Okay.
Don't tell me to go sleep. I'm an adult.
You have slept so little, and
it's fine,
the plans are coming up, man.
Yeah, that's fine.
You need some Serge Ibaka rest. You search your pocket. Did you
put myself in the chamber or the cold tub or whatever?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Get that Mafuzi trending too.
Whoops. Right. I shouldn't drop that word on that.
Yeah, it's not whatever.
It was just a sound. Yeah, I still don't like using that word on it, just in case. But yeah, everyone, thanks so much for listening. Keep supporting Will's post-game stuff. We'll try to do one of these if there's a break in the series, if drama calls for it, or when the next series comes up.
Yeah.
You know, we'll fly Justin Rowan in from Winnipeg.
He can stay out there. He can stay out there. No, people love this podcast though. Like, there are some analytics out there that like show like sort of general Raptors coverage and stuff. And this podcast is far and away you and I. Like, if it's just me, not great. I'm like DeMar, right? If it's just me, not necessarily great. But when you're here too, it's...
And if it's just me, it's just Kyle, crazy. Just piss people off.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, people don't want to watch it, even if it's effective.
You work super hard, and like, I don't know, man.
You got a big ass, and...
You got a tight lower body. Anyway.
I gotta throw that thing around right now. Okay, I gotta go.
Mafuzi. All right, yeah. Bye. Raptors in 5/6.
6.
Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply. Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply.